Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Welcome once again to Whiskey Congress. Before we get into what we're going to talk about, we've got a couple new beverages. So another beer from Dave and Philly. I need to clarify, the beer last week was actually my buddy from college who came by and left it in my fridge.
This is getting confusing.
It is. That was not intended to be sampled on the show. I just grabbed it and I was like, why is Dave giving us all these beers from Syracuse? Oh, it's because he didn't. Mm. And he messaged me and let me know that was not from us. He also sent me a message saying he really liked our discussion about the refugee situation. Thought it was good. So thank you for reaching out to us. We appreciate that. The beer we have is a Manayunk Monk from the Yunk. Anyway, it's a Belgian triple. It's very high in alcohol. It's, I think, 13% alcohol. Belgian-style beers are their own unique animal. Some people love them. Some people hate them. I kind of fall in the middle on that. This is good. This is smooth. For a 13% beer, it is smooth.
Right. So it doesn't have a lot of bite to it, and it's definitely got a lot of like citrus flavor to it, which I think is kind of standard.
It is common for Belgian, yeah.
With the Belgian beers. But, I mean, it is good. Now, this isn't my realm, so is this something that I would drink multiple of? No, but I could definitely sit down.
You probably wouldn't want to drink multiple of 30%.
Right. I mean, I could sit down and I could have one, but I couldn't do much more than that. But I think, you know, the one thing about a lot of the European-style beers, they're not really designed for heavy drinking. You know, they're designed for, you know, sit down, have a drink, have a talk, have a conversation, one or two, and then you go.
So that's a bit too general because British and the Irish are plenty.
Just
all right,
just work with me. Come on, don't
keep
don't
in my beer correct.
Don't be a ninny.
A ninny from the guy who says don't call names.
Right, but I can call you names.
That's yes, you right. do. Okay, so there's our beer. Thank you again, Dave, and sorry for blaming. I mean, the Syracuse beer was good, but sorry for blaming that on you. New whiskey for us to try.
It's not blame.
It's all right. Well, attributing. Correct.
That's the proper word. No,
all right. Thank you.
Oh. Okay. Now you don't like being corrected. Okay. Oh, okay. Weird.
Okay. There, tough guy. I don't know if it's Oyo. O-Y-O.
Is it? I'm not sure. I've never heard anyone ever pronounce it, so I don't know.
I don't think I have either.
I think it's. I think it may be because no one knows
exactly
if it's Oyo. If
they don't want to sound silly by saying it wrong.
Part of me thinks it may be Oyo, but then that kind of sounds stupid. So maybe it's O-Y-O. But either way. It's an Ohio whiskey. It's distilled, I believe, in central to southern Ohio. I tried to look real quick before we jumped into it, and I got distracted. By
Columbus, you're right.
Yeah, okay, so it is Columbus. So my initial impressions, you know, you got it and said, hey, I got this. And, you know, have you had this before? And so I haven't had this one specifically, but I've had other offerings from them, and I've not been a fan.
Okay.
So I didn't say anything. I didn't want to taint your perception. And needless to say, I think when I tasted this, I think this is a little bit better than this bottle, if you're not watching it, this bottle is black. It's literally all black with white lettering. And then they have one, I think, that's white.
I know the other one that was there was clear. Their standard offering is a clear bottle.
Right, it's clear with etched white on it.
Right.
And that one's not good.
Okay.
In my opinion.
I had that once a long time ago, and I think I shot it. And I think it was not the first thing I shot that day. So I know I had it.
You don't have a strong opinion on it from previous experience. I did, really. I just anticipated something different. I can't really, and so what's weird about this is that I can't pinpoint what about it that I don't like. So I kind of feel bad about it. But honestly, when I drink it, it doesn't kick you in the mouth with a ton of flavor. The alcohol percentage isn't very high. I think it
46.
Comes in at, oh, is it?
Yeah.
Why did I think, oh yeah, you're right.
I actually bought it because I saw that it was kicked up a notch. So
okay.
I was going to buy a bottle of Booker's, which we have not yet had on our show, but we both had that before. It's one of my, it's probably my favorite or second favorite whiskey, period. Mm-hmm. But it's big. I mean, it's typically 130 proof, and it's well, I mean, but it fluctuates,
we
right?
Have our that's standard bottle here, right. Which we refuse to drink because we just want to always have a bottle of Booker's in the background. But no, you're right. I mean, it does fluctuate, and Booker's can get up there. But back to the OYO or the OYO or whatever, you know, I'll take it up 1 point from where I had it just because it's stronger than I thought it was.
All right. And it's, all right, so it's, I agree, it's not a big bouquet of flavor, but I think it's very, very smooth.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
Mean, it does it, not it have is. Any burn.
I think there's something in my head where I got a bias against it and I feel bad.
Okay. Well, I give it a 90.
I originally gave it an 88, but I'm jumping it to an 89.
Based on the BAC?
Based on the BAC, you always, like I said, I always give them a boost if it's basically
over 45%. Yeah.
If it's over 86 proof, 86 proof and over, I typically give a what we call a booster,
right.
Or a upward adjuster, as we call it in my industry.
In your field, all right?
Yeah, it's not bad, and I really feel bad. I want to get, but there's just something in it.
Okay.
That I just rubs me the wrong way.
Whatever is causing that ranking bias is there, whatever. But yeah. But you still gave it an 89, which is a very solid score. It's not you know.
Now if I give it an 85,
it's not Jim Beam Green Apple.
Well, I mean, no flavored whiskeys, folks.
Agreed.
No, I mean, unless you're mixing up Washington apples,
unless you're doing
or
a
shots,
shot of Fireball and you want to
Fireball
stay,
is not. I know it's classified as a whiskey.
It's not a whiskey. It's a liqueur.
Stop.
Yes, it does call itself a whiskey.
You like whiskey? Yeah, dude.
I love Fireball
every night. Like, okay. Well,
you don't like whiskey. Okay. Before we get into what's going on this week, last week we talked about whether or not the officer who shot Antoine Rose would be charged. He has in fact been charged with homicide. I don't know, murder of some kind. I don't know if it was a second degree or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't see the degrees, but he was charged. I think it was actually third degree, which in Pennsylvania that's the kind of the lower tier.
Which might not be a bad thing in terms of a chance of justice because probably more likely to get convicted.
Right. I mean, so what you see there is you see a prosecutor, and they came out really quickly and charged him. I mean, considering we've seen, you know, I mean, a lot of officers we've seen not charged, and we've seen it kind of hang out there and dangle and grand jury and all sorts of hemming and hawing. There was no real hesitation here. The state's attorney or the prosecutor came out with some really strong language about what they saw and what they thought of the officer's actions. And I want to go back and correct myself. I saw some reports early that he had been fired from multiple police stations, Officer Rossfeld, but I couldn't confirm that after the fact. But he did leave multiple police stations in...
Police departments.
Or I'm sorry, police departments in... weird sort of circumstances, right? There was one where...
Well, a lot of times cops don't get fired, right? They get told, you are going to resign.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple interesting situations that he left, he wasn't actually fired, but he ends up here, and the day he's sworn in, he kills this kid. And I actually wrote something on our site about it at whiskeycongress.com, you know, talking about the officer being charged, talking about just Antoine Rose in general. And to summarize it briefly, this officer absolutely needed to be charged, and he absolutely, I believe, there's like I've seen the evidence.
Yeah.
And he's guilty. I don't think
we've also seen evidence where Walter Scott I'm drawing a blank on the kid McDonald, the kid from Chicago, got shot in the back while walking away.
Well, the thing with Laquan McDonald is still going on, and the guy in Slager who shot Walter Scott was...
Oh, that's right. He was convicted.
He was convicted
in federal court. He was
right.
Hung
I mean,
jury.
It took
right.
right. I mean, it took some time to get there, but I mean,
he was doing 30 some years. So
right, he was ultimately convicted. So
fair.
You know, in this case, I did want to. And briefly, we don't have to hang on this, but. You know, my concern is more like, how did that kid end up there? You know, that's the thing that really
You mean the cop? How did the cop?
The kid. No, the kid. Hey, how did Antoine Rose? He wasn't the shooter, right? Because the car was allegedly involved in a drive-by.
Right.
And we've seen the video of the drive-by. There's been multiple videos from a bus, from a person in a window.
I have not seen it, actually.
And, like, so there's multiple angles of it. It's the same car. Antoine Rose was in the front seat. The shooter was in the back seat. And so my thing is, how did that kid, he seemed like a decent kid based off of the history, and they all do, I know.
Right,
but,
right.
So how does he, and he had written a poem a couple years earlier about this very thing, about his concerns about going down the wrong path, about being misjudged by people and by the police and ultimately having it take his life. And this is how he, you know, meets his demise. So he was aware of this sort of situation. So how does that kid end up in this situation? And that's the thing that's one of the issues that as a society, the black community has to kind of start to rally around and say, how can we reduce these incidences, right? Like, we can't control the police, right? And a lot of people, and I make this argument in the piece that I wrote, that, you know, people will call for more police. I've called for more police in the past, and this is where our interactions with Mike Wood Jr. have definitely helped, because the more you look at it, the data shows that more police don't make the situation better.
Right.
Right. I mean, they actually make the situation worse, and then you look at crime statistics, and you look at what crime statistics actually are. You know, it's a stat sheet for police action. It doesn't necessarily measure criminal activity and safety and victimization and everything else. And so bringing more police into the situation isn't going to help, because if you're going to sit there on one hand and say systemic racism and policing is bad, then why the fuck would you bring more of them in?
Right.
Right? Like, so that doesn't make any sense. And so you have to, at some point as a community, realize the cavalry isn't coming. The cavalry is already here, and the cavalry is you, us, we, the people. And we're going to have to, and it sounds so corny and so cheesy, but we're going to have to take our streets back. And people all the time talk about, well, you know, in Chicago, right? It's always the south side of Chicago, right? That's everybody's reference point. They're like, well, you never hear anything in the media about them protesting. You do all the time, actually, if you pay attention. You don't live in Chicago. You don't watch the news on WGN or the other news stations that are there. But there are mothers, and there are groups, and there are churches, and there are people who go out and they march the streets, and they are tired of the violence, and they're tired of living in fear, and they're tired of the danger. So they go out and they do things, and they go, and if there's a particularly dangerous corner, then they'll get fathers and mothers. They'll get a group of 10 or 15 of them, and they'll stand on the corner all night to make sure that nothing bad happens on that corner. And they do it over and over and over again to protect their kids. And then you have other parents who literally go all over the city, wherever the mayor's at, they go to, and they hammer him, and they badger him, and they hammer the police chief, and they badger the police chief. They go to these crack houses and drug houses, and they force these people out. And there's a lot wrong going on in Chicago, so there's a lot for these people to overcome, and it's a massive city that's spread out. But that's the sort of action that it's going to take, a group effort where these people decide, you know, the people who live in these areas, they decide that the only way it's going to get better is if they start to kind of reclaim what is theirs.
Right.
And I think that's something that needs to, that has to get out. That message has to be spread if we really want to stop this from happening. And then, because then once you can kind of reduce the amount of crime, you can reduce the number of calls where the police have to get involved, right? Then you can ease the tension, and you can peel, you can start and to maybe mend the relationship and the bond.
Yeah, and I think, and we've said this 100 times on our show, stop arresting people for misdemeanor, you know, pot possession.
Right, let's just stop with the oh, there's a group of black kids, let's pull them over.
We'll get to that later. We have a random black kid getting the police called on to talk about later in the show.
But I mean, because police in the hood, they will, they see a kid or a black kid, maybe they know him, maybe they don't. They'll pull him over, put their hands on the car, pat him down, you know, talk shit to him, and then say, all right, get out of here.
I mean,
if they find something out, or if they plant something out, I mean.
Right. But, I mean, this is the fundamentals of stop and frisk should never have been legal. But the law is almost always said basically in what would they call a high risk areas. The language of stop and frisk was basically, if you're white in a wealthy suburb, you're not subject to this. But if you're a person of, you know,
if you're a person of color,
I mean, the law doesn't say person of color. The law says high risk group or some bullshit like that.
Exactly. I mean, and what's crazy is I actually, when I was writing the thing on Antoine Rose and Rothfeld, I really started to dig into some of those, you know, Fourth Amendment issues. And then it was merging with what's going on with the Supreme Court. And I had outlined this document that I was going to write that would have been, it probably would have, had I printed it out in paper, it probably would have been 50 pages. Okay. Because when you start to go through the court's history of, you know, people's rights and all, I mean, it's really a mess, and there's no consistent, in my opinion, from a legal standpoint, there's a lot of inconsistencies, but there is actually a consistency that shows a lot of bias and injustice towards people of color in poor neighborhoods. And it's just, it's interesting. So anyway, but not to get us too side, I mean, we're already pretty far off the rails, but, just to wrap that up, I think at least, listen, he's been charged. He'll have to go to court and he'll have to face a judge and a jury. Given the way that the people in the city of Pittsburgh reacted, and just overall, I mean, the video is pretty brutal. I mean, the kid gets out of the car and runs
so fucking fast, right?
Right. And
people say, well, what if he turned around? What if he didn't?
He didn't.
What if he had?
Like, can't play the what if game.
Right.
We can't. You can't do that. And one of the big problems for the officer for Rossfield is that his story changed between, like, listen, his story changed from what he wrote in the report to what he told the officers the investigators the first time to what he told them the second time. You know, I mean, like, so his problem is consistency. He can't stick with the story. So he never could have been a part of the usual suspects.
Right. Actually, I had an angry white guy moment, not me being the angry white guy, but I went to the Irish pub in Raleigh that met a buddy there. And so I'm meeting a friend who happened to be in town at the pub that we used to hang out at when I lived there. And the bartender has met me before because of the couple times I've stopped there while I've been traveling. And I mentioned the podcast, and man, he was hot. He either listened to our show or got a wind of where I was coming from. Maybe I was talking to another patron, and he was very angry about. I was talking about the refugee situation, basically saying it's not a simple thing. And he's like, "Well, how do we get Americans to want those jobs? How do you get Americans to want jobs picking tomatoes in 105 degree weather in California?" Probably you don't. And so anyway, but I'm like, this guy was very confrontational. And I said, oh, this last episode we talked about the kid Antoine Rose getting shot. He goes, hey, when the blood's flowing, you never know what's going to happen. I thought, you just said that out loud, you piece of shit. Wow. Yeah, he basically made it sound like, well, the guy was adrenalized. It's okay. No, it's not.
That's how it works,
that's
homie.
Not. And I honest to God, Steve, I said, well, first of all, I kept saying to him, like, dude, I'm hanging out with my buddy. If I'm sitting at the bar talking to you, that's cool. But I'm trying to catch up with a friend I haven't seen in a while. And yes, you're serving me alcohol, and I appreciate that greatly. However, calm the fuck down. And it was funny because you could see he's a bartender. He's supposed to be a calm, professional, whatever. And he on the surface was, but you know when people aren't hiding anger well, he was not hiding anger well. And all I was thinking was, thank God Steve isn't here, because when you heard, well, when your blood's pumping or whatever you say, your heart's racing, I'm like, don't make it right, man. You can't shoot someone in the back when they're running away.
As I'm dragging him over the bar, yeah, right. It's like, my blood's pumping, so this is okay. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I was like, that is, but that argument gets made all the time, and when it gets justified because, well, he was a cop and it was a high stress situation. That doesn't make it okay.
Right. And that's one of the most frustrating arguments for me to deal with. Because, listen, you don't get a pass because your job is hard or it's highly stressful, right?
I mean,
like, you got, listen, there's people who fly planes, right? There's people who You've got doctors. You've got EMTs. Like, listen.
I fucked up the heart surgery because I was under stress. Or worse yet, I chose to take the guy's heart out because of stress.
I couldn't deal with it, so I got rid of the problem. I removed the heart. Like, that's not how it fucking works.
Right.
And so, while I, you know, and it's, well, life or death. And I totally understand that. But you have to rely on your training, and you have to be able to discern what's happening. And you need to, I think this idea, like, in what we've... We've talked about this in the past, but the idea where it's been turned into us versus them mentality, and it's the police versus the criminals, and the criminals have a specific face and they look a certain way and they have a specific skin color.
Remember that time that he was a CEO, I forget the name of the company, and he was being arrested for fraud charges and they shot him in the back. Do you remember when that happened? Mm-mm. Oh, no, because it didn't, because that never fucking happens.
Oh,
I mean, I'm making a shit up. Exactly. My blood was pumping. I mean, this guy caused the stock I was buying to crash, and I
right. I mean, shot it him. Just and so, you know, we can parlay that into the Annapolis shooting that happened yesterday, which is rough. And you know, that one hit me a little bit close to home, and the reason why, because you know, at my old job, I had a project that my old company is still working on in Annapolis that was less than a mile away from where this happened. And I've been to that place many times. Not to the Capital Gazette. I didn't spend a lot of time there, but I was right in that area on a regular basis, looking at our site and, you know, talking to other business owners and dealing with, you know, the local politics and everything else that was involved in that job. And that really struck home.
Now this is a different kind of shooting, right? Because this guy was a guy with a beef. This guy was a... Right. This is not a random thing.
It wasn't random. He had a shotgun. He didn't have, like, an AR
or anything like that, right?
And I read it today. Really, really bad story, just from beginning to end. He had harassed this woman online. I think maybe he found her via Facebook or something like that. That's what it was. She said hi to him on Facebook. He replied to her saying, "Hey, you're the only person that's ever said hi to me." And she was like, "Oh, okay, well, sweet. Hey, how you doing? Hope everything is good." He wasn't good. He wasn't right. And he kind of hit her with a barrage of emails. Finally, she said, "Hey, great, thanks, stop." And then when she told him to back off, he flipped out and called her all sorts of terrible names and just would hit her with these nonstop emails all the time, to the point where she had to get a restraining order. And, you know, then he ended up getting charged with a crime, and I can't remember specifically what the crime was. And the newspaper just reported what was public record. And he sued the newspaper saying, "You guys defamed me and caused me irreparable harm." And they're like, "Well, what's not true about what they said?" And, you know, we won't get into defamation and libel and all that
yes,
other stuff.
Please.
But, you know, and he couldn't answer. So they ended up saying, "All right, well, we're throwing your case out." And then he had a vendetta ever since then. And then he directed all his rage towards the people at the newspaper for writing this story about the crime that he was convicted of. And so it's just really sad, because it escalated to the point where he just lost his shit, grabbed his shotgun, barricaded the doors, and then, you know, went on this killing spree. It's awful, you know?
When people, you know, confront me with my whole magazine restrictions and you really don't need an AR arguments, and I stand by those things, but this is an example of that. I've never said that solved the problem, and I'm not going to go down my AR rant again. If you want to hear it, hit me up on at jim@whiskeycongress.com and I will explain my stance.
In the process of being built, by the way.
Fine. Whatever. No, cool. Look, all right, I'll do it. All I've said is, admit that you're doing it because it's cool. It's not a sporting rifle. It's not a self-defense rifle. It can perform those functions, but they're cool, and that's why people like them. And you're willing to say, I think these things are protected by the Constitution or their whatever.
Listen, my argument is as long as you have white dudes waving Confederate flags talking about the South will rise again, and they've got an AR-15, what? My black ass is going to have one. Fuck all everything else. I don't give a damn about Democrats. I don't give a damn about Parkland. I'm sorry, but if you got some asshole with the AR-15, I'm going to match you bullet for bullet. Fuck that.
Okay.
All right? Like, because listen, this country doesn't have a good history with people who look like me, right? So if you think that I'm going to let those with the Confederate flags and the idiots that are out there just run around willy-nilly, and I'm just going to be like, take my guns, kumbaya, we'll all figure it out with love. I'm not. And so this is what I'm saying. I get what you're saying, but I think I got a legit argument here. And if you want to say, there's better ways to defend yourself, fine.
Well, for home defense, yes, but you're talking about against a psycho who's armed that way.
I'm talking about you get five rednecks in a fucking pickup truck that jump in my driveway. I'm not fucking around with single shot anything.
I'm not saying single shot, you are making a valid argument. I'm not going to argue with that. Again, I'm talking about. Let's not even go down the air.
Beside from the gun rights and all that other stuff, this was awful. Now, here's the other thing. There's another little thing to this, right? He was taken alive.
Right. He's been charged with 5 counts of murder.
Right.
First degree, I believe.
And I guess it's touchy, right? But it's just like, okay, you got this kid who jumps and runs out of the car, no gun in his hand, right? There's like, well, he may have been involved in a drive-by shooting.
Right.
Right? And the kid gets gunned down in the back. This guy, we know, was
involved in an active shooter
situation. 5 people.
Right. He was involved in an active shooter situation.
Somehow gets taken in alive, and people are just like, oh, well, he was smart, and he put his gun down. So that's how that happened. Hey, okay, but again, kid, no gun.
Let me try to jump in on this. You're not saying it's a shame that this asshole didn't get shot.
His name was Jared Ramos.
Jared Ramos.
That's
okay.
What I was looking for.
You're not saying it's a shame they didn't mow down Jared Ramos. Now you're probably saying if they had, you'd understand it. Right. Whereas this kid gets shot in the back, and people like the bartender
I'm not calling for them to have killed Jared Ramos,
right?
Because that's vengeance, and it's what is right. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if you can take this guy who we know is armed,
We know he's willing to kill people.
And at some point in time, like, the police got there in less than a minute after police were called. Okay. And that's a record response time for the area. So the police got there in less than a minute. So while the police was there, he was armed and he was shooting. And they still managed to take this guy alive. So that tells me that it's fucking possible. Do not give me this whole thing of, well, I feared for my life from a kid who had no gun in his hands.
And was trying to get away from, I mean.
Right, I mean, a kid who was running from me, or like in Walter Scott's case, is the 50-year-old fat guy out of shape, you know, who turned and ran instead of chasing after him because I'm, you know, 50 pounds overweight. I decided just to shoot him instead. My point is, I don't want Jared Ramos shot.
I don't want Antoine Rose shot either.
That's the point of Black Lives Matter. That's what, you know, Sean King. And it's just like, listen, if you can take these guys alive, then you can take these kids alive. And I don't care if it's only 100 kids. Well, it's only 100 kids a year that are shot that are unarmed by police. I mean, yeah, it's a drop in the bucket, but those 100 kids didn't have to fucking die. You know, that's a small Catholic school class. That is the senior class of my high school. I graduated with 100 people. So every year the police kill my high school class of unarmed black men just because. And people say, well, that's not that many given the whole number of police interactions. And fuck you, yes, it is.
And that is an example of one of those things where when it affects you, then the number doesn't matter. It hits your life personally, right? I mean, when I'm not talking about, obviously, neither of us knew Antoine Rose, but he's got a family, he's got friends, he's got whatever, and he's gone.
Right. And there's a ripple effect.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm glad you got it out there. You're not saying it's a shame this other asshole didn't get shot. You're saying, why is it that suddenly police are able to do their job effectively in an active shooter situation, but in terms of not, spraying lead everywhere, but they can't do it when someone's running away in...
Right, I mean, because in an active shooter situation, if you shoot him, I can understand that. Probably not going to argue or question it, right? Dude's waving a shotgun around,
right.
People out. Take him out. I'm not gonna argue that at all. But you managed to do it without, I mean, it probably didn't. I'm hoping that once the police got there and once they got him into the situation, then they were able to figure it out and, hopefully they weren't there while he was killing people. But, I mean, the point is that they were able to get the situation resolved and bring him in. And as an attorney, it's just like, all right, well, fuck, yes, bring him in and let's do this. But it's a shame that these kids keep dying in this situation.
And it's a shame to me that people like the bartender I talked about treat it like, well, it was a high-stress situation, so...
Chalk it up. Another number on the board. Right. I mean, I think that's also part of the problem politically on both sides is a lack of empathy for those who don't look like you or those who don't think like you. You don't care what happens to them. It's all about me, how I think, and what I want. And if I don't get what I want, then I think everything else is wrong, and I don't care what happens. Literally like children. Yep. And it's like we're having a massive regression of thought by an entire country, and maybe it's because our country is so young. We're only a couple hundred, we're 250 years old-ish.
But I don't think that's the reason.
I do, though. I guess not, because, I mean, you've got countries that are older that are having the same problem. I mean,
Brexit.
It's so funny because, you have the Democratic left in the far left. You just had the woman in New York who won, who's a socialist, and the people are pushing for socialism. Guys, Europe is a fucking mess. Don't let them fool you with their nice little accents and their funny little things that they eat that are real nice and sweet and whatever, and their tea and all that shit. Like, Europe is a mess. They got beautiful beaches and they have a real nice time, but they got all sorts of problems over there.
Yeah, but
they've got serious issues.
The issues they have, I don't believe, are related to socialism. I think. We'll go totally off the rails because I'm going to start talking about healthcare because that's my biggest thing about where socialized healthcare is a good thing, in my opinion.
I'm not saying it's bad, but
again,
you've got multiple countries that have socialized healthcare that have serious financial problems.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so, I mean, what I'm saying, it's not socialism and everybody getting healthcare is not a cure-all, fix-all, and you can look at Europe and you can see examples where they've got serious issues and they're a lot smaller than us. Right.
And you take
some of the things that we're dealing with on a large scale, and it sounds good in theory, but does it actually work? And I don't know.
Let's get back to domestic issues because major story came out this week. We're going to go right into your wheelhouse. Justice Anthony Kennedy has said he's resigning. So now Trump will get to appoint his second Supreme Court justice. Now, we've said this on the show many times. It's something we definitely agree on. When you say it doesn't matter who's president, one area where that is not true is their ability to nominate Supreme Court justices, because that impacts our lives on a regular basis and in the long term. And to me, and this may be another example of me overreacting, but it seems to me that the law has become less about the law and more about politics over the past 20, 30 years. So who the judge is who gets in the case and how they personally feel about issue A and B becomes a deciding factor on who gets nominated. And it seems we have an awful lot of 5-4 votes, and oddly, Kennedy was one of those votes you couldn't necessarily predict. We have an awful lot of votes that are straight down party appointee lines, and Trump's going to put another one in.
So I want to run through this with you.
All right.
Briefly. We're going to go through the ages of the Supreme Court justices. So Chief Justice Roberts is 61. Anthony Kennedy is 81. He's leaving. Clarence Thomas is 70. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 85.
Yikes.
Stephen Breyer, 79. Samuel Alito is 68. Sonia Sotomayor, 64. Elena Kagan is 58. And Neil Gorsuch is 50. The ones you want to focus on there are, you know, Clarence Thomas being 70. While that's not old, it's not young either. And
right.
Clarence Thomas, I mean, he's such a shill for the right that I could see them easily saying at some point if they thought that they were like definitely going to lose an election, like, hey, you need to leave so we can definitely get somebody in there, like whatever. I don't know. But I could see him, whatever. I just don't like Clarence Thomas.
I know. I know.
Like,
I just
can't fucking stand him. He's so predictable as a Supreme Court justice. It's ridiculous and it's embarrassing.
John Stewart used to do a joke how he said, you know, the Supreme Court votes on this, unless you're Clarence Thomas, then...
You do what Antonin Scalia
does. Does, yeah.
I mean, that's... fucking John Stewart.
I like John Stewart.
I do, too. John Stewart, I like John Stewart a lot. I'm just... He does... Anyway.
Yes. Moving on.
To my comic hate.
Right.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg... Which is very rare. Ruth Bader Ginsburg being 85 is scary. Because
even if she doesn't retire,
now
she's 85.
The thing with Ruth Bader Ginsburg is she won't. I do need to know. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she won't retire with Donald Trump in office. I firmly believe that. Even if Donald Trump were to be in for 8 years, I believe she would fight and claw her way through until we saw a Democratic president or a president that was a Democrat. So she would feel comfortable leaving it in that person's hands. But the reality is, while I firmly believe she will fight until her dying breath, as bleak as it sounds,
she's 85.
She's 85. And the prospect of her making it to, you know, 80, which you need, she would need to get to what?
88? 87, 88, yeah.
That's, I don't know.
Unless they treat the... her like the last Obama appointee where they say, oh, you're in their last year in office, we don't need to
Sorry. I mean, but I just, with her being 85 years old,
no, I mean,
there's a realistic
things
chance,
happen to 85 year olds all the time. It's just
right. I mean, she doesn't necessarily have to die. She could just get to a point where she's incapacitated, and so that would mean Trump would have three appointees. But you know, there's also Samuel or Stephen Breyer, who's 79. And, you know, again, Anthony Kennedy is 81 and he's decided to hang it up. Breyer, in the next couple of years, he could
well do the same.
He could do the same thing. So, that's the thing.
Having said that, Gorsuch is one of the few things that Trump did that I don't think he was inappropriate about. Like, I think Gorsuch was a logical...
Yeah.
I mean, well, I'm not saying I'm a fan of the guy, but I didn't
Gorsuch
think...
Gorsuch is... I didn't hang him out to dry for it because I think, from a legal standpoint, looking at the decisions that Gorsuch had on the books, he was a pretty, you know...
He was qualified.
Right. I mean, qualified for sure, and I don't think he was the...
right-wing ideologue that maybe
right,
some people
exactly.
hope for.
That's exactly right. And so I think you're okay there. And, you know, with these justices, you never know what they're going to do once they get on the bench. You don't know how they're going to perceive their job. You don't know how they're going to execute it. I mean, I think with Elena Kagan and Sotomayor, you have kind of a little bit of a... It's a little bit different. Like, you know, you knew going in that they were going to push hard for... you know, some progressive values in the way that they analyzed and viewed the law. But, you know, so the thing is, if Trump gets, he's already got, so he's going to have two, we know for sure.
Yeah.
And theoretically,
four is not impossible.
Right. Four is not impossible because he could get Ruth Bader Ginsburg and he can get Breyer. outside shot at Thomas. I doubt Thomas just because Thomas is 70. But
like you said, Thomas could take one for the team and say, you know, ride off into the sunset and we're going to put the equivalent to you in your spot and be a team player.
It would Clarence Thomas comes into play if Trump gets reelected.
It's funny to me that because I know how much you hate Clarence Thomas and we've had these.
I don't want to do this. So
all right, let's not do
that. But what I will say is it's definitely realistic where we could see Trump having a total of 4 Supreme Court nominations under his watch.
Right.
Now, the one thing that I say all the time is that losing elections has consequences.
You do say that all the time. And you're 100% right. I'm not trying to be snarky.
This is the consequence for Hillary, the Democrats, and the progressive left. They couldn't get their shit together in 2016. Hillary decided to take the ball and hide. You know, kind of like a team that thinks they, you know, like a football team. Yeah,
they've got the game won.
They go into prevent defense. All they do is run the ball. And the next thing you know, the defense gets a fumble and they get a long drive and it's a tie game and they've got the momentum and then they get it across the goal line. Bam.
Suddenly you lost. Patriots, how did this happen?
Patriots beat the Rams or bam, Donald Trump beats Hillary.
Right.
And now this is the consequence of losing. It's not Hillary's shame. It's not the investigations and everything else. All that shit is just noise. This is the consequence of Hillary deciding that she's not going to campaign in Midwestern states. This is the consequence of their arrogance as a party.
The Democrats coronating rather than nominating
right.
Hillary Clinton.
This is them
deciding it was her turn.
Right. This is them. This is Bernie deciding that he was going to run, and he was gonna like because people say, oh, Bernie got screwed. It's like, well, actually, Bernie screwed the party. Sorry, he did. I get it, but like he didn't have a chance. And to your point, like Hillary got coronated, but at some point in time you got to think strategy. What's more important, you and yours, or the greater good? And listen, I get what you're going to say. I get all that.
You know what I'm going to say. I guarantee you don't know what I'm going to say. Because good,
but fine. And this also is a condemnation against the Jill Stein voters and the
Gary Johnson
voters and everything else because you were so worried about I can't pick the lesser of two evils and I got to be different and, you know, I'm a contrarian and all that other shit. Well, there you go. This is what you get. So now you got Trump who's going to be able to make 4 picks, maybe. Right?
Maybe,
we know for sure he's going to get 2. Yeah. He may get 3. He could get 4. And then now all of a sudden the things that hang in the balance, like now things get real because now there's a chance Roe versus Wade goes away. Right now, there's a chance where gay marriage goes away. Now there's a chance where the Affordable Care Act completely goes away.
Right,
right. I mean, now all of a sudden, like these are legit, real, serious things that mean a lot to a lot of people on the opposite side of this aisle, because the people that you want to champion for Hillary left and right, but Hillary didn't champion for you, not you specifically, but in general, the people wanted to champion for Hillary. She let you down. Her and her campaign, they let everyone down, right, by half-assing it in an election that they thought they had won.
Right. Oh, they thought, who's going to vote for this clown? Well, enough people to beat you.
Right.
And
because
don't
you
even,
couldn't,
don't even
because
do
you
the,
didn't do that. You didn't get down and dirty and do the research and really say, how do I win an election? You thought you already knew because your husband had did it twice. Your husband did it twice
by landslides.
20 fucking years ago.
By landslides.
Anyway, sorry.
All right. Yeah, that's all right. So there, yeah. So
right. Impact.
Yeah. No, exactly. And the thing about it is the impact goes on for years, right?
Gorsuch is 50.
Right. He's going to be on the Supreme Court theoretically for
30 years, right.
And so will, I mean, when Roberts got put in place, he was 50 or 50-ish.
Yeah.
He's now the Supreme Court Chief Justice. He's 61 years old. And I actually don't think he's been a complete ideologue either. I think
no,
he's
he
been,
hasn't. I mean, he but, was. I mean, he was the one on the Affordable Care Act
right.
decision.
The right wing lost their blue, minds.
Right,
oh my gosh.
I mean, it did. I mean, and even people who were excited about it just couldn't believe it.
And you know, if you think about what I was going to say before about qualifications, do you? You, I'm sure you recall Bush's first nomination for what became Robert Spot. Harriet Myers, his personal lawyer who had never been a judge. Yep. And people would say, well, technically he can't. Yeah, he can, but she's not fucking qualified to be a Supreme Court justice. She's probably not qualified to help me write up my contract to refinance my house.
I don't know.
Okay,
I
mean, she might be. I don't know. That's a cheap shot, but you get the point. She was not a legit.
I mean, I think I'm barely qualified to be a fucking magistrate. More or less a Supreme Court justice,
and that's you're more qualified than Mary
exactly.
Myers.
Exactly. So now, listen. So the way this works is for whoever Trump nominates to take the place of Anthony Kennedy, they're going to need to be confirmed by the Senate.
Right.
Congress has nothing to do with this, and they need a simple majority vote. Right?
Because
51-50,
because of Obama time.
Technically because of Joe Biden, right?
Okay,
right.
Well, I thought it was because,
well, it all started with Joe Biden, but then it ends up being because of Mitch McConnell and Merrick Garland,
the obstructionist,
right and everything yep. else, and so they were obstructionists, and then then Gorsuch comes along, and so McConnell says, "All right, fine, we'll go nuclear, get rid of the filibuster." And now you just need a simple majority, right? So you need 51 votes.
And the Republicans currently have 52 seats.
They've got 52. Is that right? I think they've got 51 seats.
51 seats, okay.
They've got 51. Because what happens... No, they've got 51. And
oh, that's right. Because of Doug Jones and Roy Moore.
Because of Doug Jones and Roy Moore. So if one person says... One Republican says no... on the Senate confirmation of the Supreme Court justice, then it's a tie. But that doesn't really help because
the vice president votes.
Mike Pence would come in and he would definitely vote for whoever the president nominates.
So you really need two Republicans to flip.
So you absolutely need two Republicans to flip. Now, this is what sucks about the timing on this. And this is what frustrates me because Kennedy has now decided that he wanted to play politics by deciding to retire now. Right,
ahead of the 2018 elections.
Ahead of the Senate to see where things settle out and to allow the people to ultimately have a say in who the next justice is, he decided to play politics by saying, I'm going to do it now. And we know for a fact that the Trump administration had been pushing for this. They were not comfortable with the way the 2018 midterm elections were going to go, and they wanted to do it before any sort of seats flipped. And the fact that he acquiesced really disturbs me and goes back to the point that you made earlier talking about the politicalization of the Supreme Court.
Which is supposed to be
law. Which is supposed to be
constitutional,
the exact opposite of politics. And he directly inserted himself into that. And so now, in order to prevent someone from being confirmed... then you would essentially need two current members of the Senate that are Republicans to vote no.
Assuming all 48 Democrats vote no, which is not a guarantee.
Yeah,
it isn't. A guy like Joe Manchin from West Virginia could easily flip. You get
a little drama there. I mean,
oh, I disagree.
On a Supreme
Joe Manchin's
going
to try to. Joe Manchin cares most about getting Joe Manchin reelected. We've seen that, and I don't dislike Joe Manchin, but. I know of him, and when he's walking around West Virginia saying we don't have New York values here in West Virginia, I'm like, well, first of all, if you're trying to side with Trump, he's from New York. But second of all, he's playing that whole card of we're not like them hotshot types.
Disagree. Okay. Moving on. So you're gonna need basically all you're gonna need two Republicans to jump ship.
So Jeff Flake has said he's not running again. What other Republican senators have said they're not running again?
Corker, Bob Corker and Flake both aren't running again
because those are the guys who have the ability to say
they
fuck
could
you.
Fuck it up.
I just gave the double bird like Eminem style.
And there's a couple
one of those fingers on each hand up.
Right, and then there's because it's an abortion issue, there's a couple women. who also
The senator from Maine, whose name I can never remember. I feel like an asshole.
Maine, is it McCaskill?
It might be. Claire McCaskill?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's potential here where you could see this confirmation kind of stuck in the mud. Now, the issue is, the way this is going to work is, even if you, like, so let's say Flake, McCaskill, you get three people to turn this down, right? So right. Even if your boy Manchin flips, theoretically, you could still have.
If I didn't do that to you all the time, I would fight back, but I do it to you all the time.
So you, even though you still have, so you take a guy like Manchin, and he says, all right, I'm a Democrat, but I'm going to go the other way. You could still have three people enough to where the vice president doesn't matter.
Right.
And so what would then happen is we would have to wait for the midterms. Now, waiting for the midterms gets scary because at this point you've got 35 total seats up for grabs. And of those 35 seats, 24 are
Democrats.
Are Democrats.
Right.
And then of those 24, 11 are hot seats where we it don't know
either way.
They could go either way. And that's where it gets scary for Democrats because they're saying, listen, we feel good about
that's what the biggest issue with midterms is everyone's saying, oh, there's gonna be this big blue wave. But you have to do the math. 2010 was a time when Democrats or 2012 was a time when Democrats took over the Senate. 2018 becomes a time those seats are starting to come due. So yeah, there's a lot more for the Democrats to lose, to have the opportunity to lose, than to gain. He said 24 out of 33 are Democrat seats now that could flip, and if they go the other way, that's a big big punch in the face to gaining recontrol of the Senate. All right, can we move on? There's two stories I really want to talk about, and then I want to talk a little bit of sports.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about that's fine. But
what's our time at?
52.
Okay.
So Terry Crews testified in front of Congress. I guess we're staying in politics. Terry Crews testified in politics in front of Congress this week. And he talked about his basically he represents the male side of the Me Too movement. And there's a lot of stuff that gets said about a guy like Terry Crews. If you don't know who he is, he's the super jacked black guy in the Old Spice commercials. He was on The Newsroom. He was great on The Newsroom. We've talked about that before. He's been in a bunch of movies. He's a very accomplished Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's a very accomplished actor.
He was
now
in Friday After Next.
Okay. I've seen Friday a bunch of times. I've seen some of Friday After Next, but I don't know that one as well.
It's the third one.
It's Friday. It was Friday, next Friday, and then Friday After Next.
Mm-hmm.
How about that, huh?
Okay. Be careful, RZA.
Fuck you. I'd be the notorious FU if I was a rapper. So Terry Crews, I'm a fan of him as an actor. He's President Camacho in Idiocracy also, which is great. But he talks about a story about being sexually harassed where an agent grabbed his dick, I believe in public, and he was afraid to speak out. And he said basically, he said the Me Too movement isn't exclusively women. And Dianne Feinstein asked him a question about it. And said basically, you're a big, powerful guy. Why? I don't know how she phrased the question, but he very emotionally responded, "I'm a black man in America. If I respond with violence, my career is over. I'm going to jail." And it's important to note that when this thing happened, he was not the big star he is now. So.
I think he was on the Ice Cube show. Are We There Yet?
Okay.
And I think his biggest role in a movie was Friday After Next.
Okay.
So I'm gonna jump in here and say like this. So this is.
Let me tell you what it's like to be a big, strong black man in America. Oh wait, why don't you do that?
Okay.
It's bad.
I wanted to make sure that you knew how bad it was.
Right, here's some dead air time for you to think about that.
Think about what you just did.
All right.
So I get where he's coming from. Now, I've never had a man come up and grab. Well, actually,
You've been in a lot of locker rooms. Don't tell me this shit never happened.
Well, I've been
in locker rooms too.
I've had a lot of weird shit happen. I once had, working at a bar, Cherry Red in Chicago. I had a girl. We were closing the bar up, and she was there. One of the late VIP girls, and she was definitely hammered. And she walked up to me and literally grabbed me by the dick and was just like, very aggressive, and I'm like, no, sweetie, no. Like,
this is not appropriate.
Not even that it's not appropriate. It's like I literally had to go. I had to be at the front door for a specific reason, and it's like there's nothing that I can do with you or this or anything else. And this stop. It's bizarre. And so I relate to Terry Crews on the level of, you know. When people were talking about the Me Too movement, I wrote a story on our site about Aziz Ansari.
Right. We disagreed.
And we disagreed on that, and I stand by that.
Fine.
But
so do I.
I stayed relatively quiet with this because as a man, especially as a big, strong black man, and I don't know if there's any other way you could describe a guy like me or Terry Crews other than that. Right, like, I mean, it literally.
Those are undeniable statements.
They personify almost who we are to a degree, and maybe until you get to know us, right? And you and I don't know Terry Crews personally, but you know me personally, you know me beyond just being a big, strong person. But being a big, strong person.
If there's anyone out here who doesn't watch the show or whatever, this dude deadlifts like 750 pounds regularly,
or 800.
I thought seven.
On a consistent basis, 750.
He's competed and done eight. I'm just saying, he's not exaggerating. Go.
Besides that, though, a lot of times that kind of comes to be what defines us, especially if you're a larger black male, is your size and your strength. And so one of the things I deal with on a consistent basis are women coming up to me, grabbing, touching my arms, looking at the size of my arm, touching my chest, you know, rubbing my back. And just feeling me, and it's not comfortable. It's not, you know, I'm with other people. I'm with coworkers. I'm with friends. I at a work function, people I work with, people that I work for. It's happened at Christmas parties. It's happened in venues. It's happened in bars. Literally, sometimes I'll be walking down the street and a woman will stop and just say, oh my God, I just have to touch your arms, and will touch my arm or touch my chest or what have you. And I'm supposed to just accept it. Right. And the thing, if I were to push a woman, like, don't touch me.
Right.
Then it would be a thing and not a thing, a positive thing in my favor.
Right.
Right, I mean, but that's just something
I mean, if this goes to court, it's, well, she touched me and I protected myself. Like, she's a 115 pound woman. You're you. Why did you have to protect yourself?
Well, right. I mean, did she really pose a threat to you? And it's not about did she pose a threat to me physically, but she did make me uncomfortable. Like, it's not I didn't want, like, the idea that I'm a man and I want any and every woman to touch me no matter what. Well, it's not actually true. I actually don't. Like, I have personal space and boundaries that I feel should be respected, but I've come to have to accept that they're not, right?
Right.
And I mean, the other thing, because guys do it too. Guys will, dudes come up and just like, damn, bro, your arms are big. And, you know, they'll do the thing where they put the fingers, like, damn, bro, you got big arms, man, you're a big old boy. Like, yes, motherfucker, you can see that from over there. Why the fuck do you have to touch me? And so... Like, I get it. Like, it's not my dick, but still, like, don't fucking touch me. Like, I don't know you.
So the thing about Terry Crews, a lot of people say, you know, you were safe, you were whatever. And from a standpoint of evaluating the quote unquote level of assault, like, you know, the Harvey Weinstein shit is not the same ballpark.
But
in terms of
it's not about level of assault. It comes down to respect of boundaries and just like level of comfortability.
Right.
And everything that I'm telling you, like, you like your bartenders.
I do.
You like your female bartenders.
I do.
You get flirty with them. And I'm guaranteed you paid multiple car payments for bartenders.
I have not paid. In installments
through tips, right? And I have a very standoff relationship with bartenders, with female bartenders and female servers and women in general. And it's almost like the hotter they get, the more distant I get from them. And the reason why is, like, I've been in that position where you're behind the bar and you're serving people and you're trying to be nice and you're trying to find that balance between, I want you to buy more booze, but I'm not going to go home with you. You know,
and I am well aware that the bartender is not going home with me.
I get it that you're well aware, but the thing is that there's a certain level of kind of comfortability that you have to kind of expose yourself on that way if you're a bartender. And like it's like, that seems like a lot of melodramatic phrasing, but I think I told you, like, I did it at there was a gay nightclub in Chicago. And the guy who owned that club owned Cherry Red, which is the bar that I worked at, which was not a gay nightclub. It was just a big nightclub in Lincoln Park. But he also owned Hydrate, which was a very big gay bar, which was in Boys Town in Chicago. And during Gay Pride Week, he's like, listen, it's all hands on deck. You got to, you know,
I don't know the story.
Okay, so he would pull staff from Cherry Red and say, you got to bartend at Hydrate. Like, there was no questions about whether you were comfortable with it or not. It's just like, you do it. And I was just like, all right, cool, fine. So they tucked me away in a corner, this little corner bar. It was me and Ramon, my bar back, and we slang drinks all fucking night, right? And Hydrate is a nice club. You know, it's right, I forget the name of the street now, it's been years, but it had these big open windows, but it got hot as fucking there. It was the summertime. And so, like, I'm wearing a t-shirt, but you know, this is, you know, before I could afford Under Armour on a consistent basis, so it was just a regular t-shirt. So I'm soaked
through, yeah,
all the way through. And needless to say, my big beefy ass, like the girl, the gay dudes, just like love me, right? To the point where it was just like, all right, man, you gotta back off, back the fuck. Like literally, the one guy was just like, listen, if you keep going, like this ends terribly for you. Just stop. And being in that position, I get what the women feel like when the guys are, you know, like from all the way down the scale, from just friendly guy at the bar all the way to over aggressive guy at the bar. And then when you compound that with, I want to touch your muscles and I want to feel your muscles and I want to touch your arms and I want to feel you, it's just like, oh, whoa. Now, listen, I'm fine, right?
Like, physically. From physically, your physical safety is not, right,
not in peril.
Right.
Right. Because if you take it too far, I'm going to ruin your night. Right. Like it's just going to end bad for you. I mean, it is what it is. But it's still a really shitty feeling.
Right.
Right. Because the flip side of it is, right, with women, I can't do anything. If I tell you to stop, it makes it awkward. Right. And then I'm the bad guy. Right. And even if I tell you to stop and you don't stop, I can't do anything because I go from being just an asshole to like probably going to jail. So the level of discomfort that you can be put in because of your position in life, right? Because you're a black male, we can do whatever we want to you physically. And if you respond in any sort of way from yelling too loud or being too physical, then you are now the bad guy. You're the perpetrator. You're a criminal, right? So you sit back and you take it.
Well, in the case of Terry Crews, this was also
his career was
right
on the line.
Exactly. He's because trying
then,
to make it
because that guy could have ousted him, and then that he may have never worked again.
Right.
Not only in Hollywood, but in general, like he may have had to just been a fucking bouncer.
Right.
You know. I mean, and so he had to weigh it in the balance, and you got to think fucking quick. You know. I mean, it's just like, all right, well, this dude's grabbing my dick, so I could either punch him in the face, or I could just stand here
and
wait till he
it,
gets
right.
done and deal with it. Right,
it is. I mean, again, the level of assault should not be compared.
According to a local police officer, though, he should have just shot him.
Local?
Any police officer?
Oh, okay.
Like a local, okay, you know, right. Leo.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, that just took a different turn than I was expecting. But right, anyway,
well, I mean, because his adrenaline's up.
Right, gotcha.
He doesn't have time to react or think. This guy's grabbing my dick. I don't have time, so I snapped his neck.
That actually would be a far better defense than shooting someone in the back. All right, man. We're well over an hour five. I want to do some sports talk real quick if we can. And we still haven't done Come At Me, Bro.
I don't know if we're going to get to Come At Me, Bro this week just because of time, because we're over an hour. Unless you've got a really good one.
I've got one now.
Oh, God damn it. All right, so maybe we'll do, you know what? We'll do the sports talk another time because that'll still be there the next time we get around.
Well, actually, my Come At Me, Bro kind of touches on sports talk, so it'll bring it all together. I've got a bunch of ways I wanted to go, but some of them will last. So I'm going to go with the first one I came up with. LeBron James opts out of his contract or out of his option today. So he's becoming a free agent. And Chris Paul is up in the air where he's going to go. Players have taken control of the players who've established themselves as superstars have taken control of their situation, which is so different than it was 40 years ago. It's changed a lot over the years. Right? In the NBA now, superstar players are able to say they can team build might be a bit of an overstatement, but it's not a huge overstatement. What do you think of that? I've got an opinion on this. What do you think of it?
Say that one more time.
Players have created the ability to build teams. Superstar players have created the ability to build. We saw it with LeBron in Miami. LeBron coming to Cleveland, it changes things. Happened in Golden State with Durant going there. Now we got Durant's a free agent. LeBron's a free agent. Kawhi Leonard is in a contract year. So now players are having the ability in the NBA and in other sports to kind of construct teams, which is a huge change from, you know, decade to decade. How do you feel about that? I have an opinion on this, and I will share mine. I just wanted to put that to you first.
Listen, it's... It sucks because we're in Cleveland, and we really have to deal with this head on, because we've got the best player in the league and the world on our team who's trying to figure out if he's going to stay or go. So for us, we're sweating bullets every minute because if he leaves, then we got a major void to fill.
We're fucked.
Now, last time we didn't fill that void well. I think that Dan Gilbert is a little bit more prepared, although the team won't be good. I mean, we're probably dealing with another lottery team, and okay, fine.
All right.
But how do I feel about their ability
to do
it?
The concept, yep.
I don't care. It makes sense, right? I mean, like, if you have... My thing is that you look at the NFL and how players are controlled and restricted, and that, to me, I have a certain level of uncomfortability with that, and maybe it's because I played football... And I know the wear and tear on your body, so that sucks, right? Like, you have no control over, you have very little control over your situation, and your body takes the most abuse out of any of the major sports, right? I mean,
yeah,
so
definitely.
It should almost kind of be the opposite, where, you know, the NBA, they're kind of in the middle in terms of abuse that they take. If you're talking about football, baseball, basketball, hockey is not because they're distant.
I would say, yeah, okay, baseball is less abuse to your body than basketball or
right,
football
it is.
For sure.
Right,
I mean,
right.
No argument.
Baseball is the least abusive
John
to your
Kirk
body.
John played baseball for 13 years.
Right. I mean, what's his name? Bertolo Colon is still playing.
He's 44 years
right,
old.
I mean,
and weighs 310 pounds.
Right. And he's so chubby, but it's hilarious to watch him pitch and he's still
and
throwing
striking
heat.
People out.
Right. I mean, he just gets his weight behind him and he's like, listen, I got 50 pitches. Like, let's do this. So I don't have a problem with it. It's interesting to see these majority black athletes really start to put pressure on these white owners, and these white owners can't do anything about it, and it drives them fucking nuts. It literally drives them. Like, Dan Gilbert is losing his shit because Dan Gilbert hates the fact that LeBron James has control of this situation. He's to the point where LeBron James and everything he's worth to this team, Dan Gilbert's been to four straight finals because of LeBron James. Think about that. Four straight finals in 1-1, and the only thing he could think of, I want that fucking nigger out of here so I can get control of my team back. It's ridiculous. right? What the fuck are you going to do, Dan? You're going to rely on fucking Tristan Thompson, right? And him fucking a Kardashian and Rodney Hood, right? Who couldn't get his head out of his ass for 40 fucking games, right? Like, that's who you're going to rely on to get your team back to prominence? Okay. Like, just shut the fuck up, Dan. Figure out what you got to do to get LeBron back. It is what it is. Like, he fucking owns you. And so, I don't have a problem with that. Sorry.
I think it's a really good thing that the product, meaning the players, get a chance to control their ability to do their jobs. I think that's great. There was a guy I was working with in North Carolina, and he was wearing a Cavs shirt. And I said, "Are you from Cleveland?" He said, "No, I'm just a LeBron fan." I said, "Oh, well, I live in Cleveland." He said, "Okay." He said, "Are you prepared for him to leave?" And I said, "This time I am." I said, "I didn't like the way he handled the first time around, but I think
he won't make that mistake again."
No, he won't. And
also, he's not leaving.
Okay. Actually, that was going to be my come at me, bro. Then I changed it to this. So anyway, it was cool because this guy looked at me and he said, "You know, all right, be honest. Will other people be like you and say he brought us a championship? He did everything we asked of him. You know, the hate will not reoccur." And I think that's absolutely will be the case. I don't think he's staying. I think he's going to go somewhere with another superstar.
There's only one option.
LA?
The Lakers are the only option.
Why not the Clippers?
He doesn't want to go. He doesn't want to play for the Clippers. He wants to play for the Lakers.
I don't know that I agree with that.
I don't care.
Well, I know you
so
don't.
Far. Like, I sorry.
Why not?
Wrong.
Okay. Like, well, we'll see. We will see. All right. We can abandon my come at me, bro. I was expecting you to say fuck you, super rich white guys. You don't own the people who make the money for you, and I agree with you 100% on that. Good for you. And like you said, what
well,
LeBron has done for Dan Gilbert
well,
is
yeah, I mean, it's
way
just,
more than Dan Gilbert.
It's just more. I mean, it's just listen. As a person who works, you want to be in control of your situation,
right?
Right.
And I mean, to some degree, you're not ever.
Yeah, but
unless
I mean,
you're
to
that
agree,
guy,
you are. If you're good at what you do, then you can control your
look
situation.
Look who you're talking to. I'm a consultant who changes.
Right. I mean, right.
Every
I mean,
six
and,
months,
and you do it all the time,
and I do it because I can get away with it.
Listen, and I didn't leave my last job
no,
for
you,
any other
no,
reason because
you got recruited.
I made the choice. I said, eh, you know what?
No,
this is a better
they recruited situation. You.
They did,
which is a compliment,
and I take that compliment. But I mean, like, but and so I, LeBron, no different. Different,
right.
Well, I mean, no different on base level, but now, like, hey, there's a whole city hanging, state, region hanging in the balance, and everybody wants to know, but he's got to do what's right for him. Now, listen,
and he accomplished
if he leaves,
his goal of bringing the title to Cleveland, so
great,
he wins.
Fine, whatever. If he leaves, I'll be pissed, though, right?
I mean, I'll be disappointed.
Day,
I won't be pissed.
Listen,
I will not be
but
pissed.
I'm a Cavs fan,
and I am too.
Well, I'm a Cavs fan, so like, I watch those. Like, I'm not saying that you're not, but what I'm saying is that. You know, I go back to Larry Nance, Mark Price, Hot Rod Williams.
Yes, you go
you know,
further
even,
back than me. I was a Pistons
even,
fan of those
even,
days.
You know, even Harper and not you know, not
yes,
our
not,
Harper
not,
friend, but what I'm saying is that, like, I'm front of the jersey fan.
Right, right.
And
I don't know, I get you.
And so for me...
I mean, you grew up in Ohio. I did not.
Right. And so for me, I want to see my team win. And he is the best option for us to win.
Clearly.
If he goes on, it's just like, hey, thanks. You got us a championship. Go fuck yourself. You promised us you wouldn't leave. You said you were going to retire here. You wrote a goddamn letter. You went through all these fucking dramatics. You jumped through all these goddamn hoops. And you burn us. You motherfucker. I hope you get stuck in traffic in L.A. and you're late to a photo shoot. And Space Jams 2 is going to fucking suck. Go fuck yourself, LeBron.
All right. We cannot end my come at me, bro, better than that. Come at me, bro.
This one's a little personal.
Oh, boy.
What the fuck is a giant bucket of water? And by bucket, I mean it's literally a 70-gallon jug of water that collects rainwater in your backyard. Why the fuck do you have it?
It's a 55-gallon barrel that collects rainwater for me to water my gardens with, so I'm not using city water to water my gardens and I'm not wasting water.
Oh, my God. I hate you so much.
This has been Whiskey Congress, everybody. Thank you for listening. We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. I love my rainwater collection.
Fine. It's great. Good for you and the earth.
Yes, it is good for me and the earth, which you should appreciate. You clearly don't.
Great. No, it's good.
If you see what was in my compost pile this morning, or my compost thing inside this morning, you'd have probably thrown up. We are at Whiskey Congress on all social media. Email us. Jim at Whiskey Congress is me. Steve at Whiskey Congress is the large black man yelling at me right now. We enjoy all the feedback. I hope you enjoy the beverage reviews and the show. And we will be back next week, if not sooner. Later.